And what is the purpose of marriage? And who regulates marriage, church or state? I'm Tom Baker. You're listening to Law and Gospel on this Wednesday, October the 2nd, in the year of our Lord, 2013. And Wednesdays are Insight Wednesdays. Where do I get these insights? I'm not that good in the Hebrew or the Greek. A lot of times I like looking at other scholars who find insights, and then I try and bring them on the radio and share them at the level that the lay people can understand them. But I ran across a very insightful book. It's actually by the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Matthew C. Harrison, and it's entitled Second Thoughts About Living Together. I get around quite a bit because each Sunday I'm trying to be at a different congregation doing Bible studies, seminars, sermons, and the like. And it's just really interesting how many pastors are having trouble with individuals living together who are not married. And we're not just talking about young people. We're also talking about older people. Because of the laws of the land in regard to Social Security, once you reach a certain age and then you marry again, you can lose some benefits. And so people are living together in order not to lose benefits. But is that proper? I think one of the most important questions to answer is who regulates marriage, the church or the state? And the answer is yes. What? Well, when we're talking about the church, we're talking about the spiritual order. And when we're talking about the state, we're talking about the temporal order. And God is over both. In regard to the state, Romans 13:1, let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. In other words, the state is in charge of having lawful and civil regulations that are really good works about obedience to God. For example, it is right that Christians hold political office. It's right for a man to marry a wife or a woman to be given in marriage. Now, Christians need to be obedient to those rules. The problem is that sometimes the state sets up marriage in such a way that is contrary to the will of God. Like, for example, same-sex couples being married. There, the Christian is not to obey the state. For indeed, Acts 5:29, we are to obey God rather than men. Now, some people say, well, look at how they got married in the Old Testament. They began living together right away. We don't see any ceremonies. Well, there's no doubt that at different times during the course of the world, there were different ways in which a lawful marriage could occur. But that doesn't mean that we have to ignore the laws of our land. That is to say, somebody just can't decide to be married and start living with someone because the laws of each state have certain conditions that need to be met. Now, I know, and this was, I think, practiced more in the old days than it is today, and that is the whole idea of whether or not a paper is really important. Can't you have just a common law marriage? Well, the problem with that, in those few states that still allow that, the common law marriage doesn't become a marriage sometimes for up to 7 years. In other words, the man or the woman is not really loving the partner at all, knowing that up to that 7 years, if one of them dies, the other one doesn't have any rights at all to the property, because they're not technically married yet. So the church isn't going to sit around for 7 years and allow somebody to, shall we say, be living together, particularly if they're doing it in a public way. You may have a question about marriage. Don't hesitate to call me at 1-800-821-0850. That's in the St. Louis area. And then toll-free long distance, 1-800-730-2727. See, marriage is publicly and voluntarily entered into. But some people will say, well, look, if I'm living with someone, that's a public act. Everybody knows about it. But as President Harrison points out, no, that's not what is meant by public. By being public, it is when an act in which two people make a formal, official, and legally binding public declaration of commitment for life. And I know when I was married, it involved getting a blood test, obtaining a license from the state, taking solemn vows before an agent of the state. Oh, I thought you got married in a church. Yes, but guess what? Pastors, when they marry, are not agents of the church, but agents of the state. And if they don't meet the qualifications, they cannot conduct marriages. For example, when I was in Michigan, as long as you were a pastor in Michigan, you could conduct a marriage. But a pastor from Indiana couldn't come over and conduct the marriage, at least the legal part. They may do the sermon or something like that, but they couldn't do the legal part because they weren't residents of Michigan. In Missouri, for quite a bit of time, it didn't matter if you were a pastor of a recognized church in the United States. If you were not a citizen of this country, you could not do marriages. So there were a lot of pastors who had visas, but they weren't citizens, and therefore they could not conduct a marriage. Missouri finally did change that. It was, somebody said, to stop the Moonies from having all these marriages. But you see, the state runs how the marriage is done. But if it is contrary to the Word of God, as I said, then it really doesn't matter. We don't obey the state. Now, the Bible sometimes gives the impression that, well, being engaged is the same as being married. And in fact, there were times when an engagement was so considered legally binding that a man who broke the engagement could be sued by the woman for fraud. But that no longer is true in our society. This is just simply not the case. If it were, breaking an engagement would be the same as divorce and have to be treated as divorce by church and state. But it is not viewed as a final, legal, lifelong contractual commitment. That occurs during the marriage ceremony. So some people say, well, so you have to have a piece of paper? If two people are committed to each other for life, why do they have to have a marriage license? Well, how many people do you know who are living together who have made that commitment for life and then refused to get married? Very few have such a commitment. You can hardly watch a television drama these days. I was watching Chicago Fire recently, and everybody is fooling around with everybody. And nobody thinks second of it. This is why it's really difficult being a Christian in this day and age. Because a Christian stands for the will of God, not for our own wills. And so the reason that a marriage license is important, it is a public statement that you have made the commitment. God is not anti-state. In marriage, God works through the state. And the Bible backs that up, Titus 3:1. Remind them to be submissive to rulers and authorities, to be obedient, to be ready for every good work. Now, because society has accepted something doesn't mean the church is going to accept it. A perfect example in 1973 was abortion. There's no way that God justifies an abortion. So the church ought not be for the abortion mills. And, well, same-gender marriage would fall under that. And many other things. where the state may okay it, but just because society has accepted it doesn't make it right. Look at the time of Jesus, all the things that society were doing. In fact, one of them he spoke out against quite strongly. A Jewish man could divorce his wife for any reason. And Jesus reminded them, no, from the beginning, it was not so. Now, again, getting back to the whole idea of how marriage comes about, each nation goes about it differently. I remember when I was in Russia, the church, I was teaching at Novosibirsk for a few weeks, the church was not permitted to marry anybody. What had to happen? Well, Christians would get married in the church, and then they would go to the state authorities. And I remember being present for one of those marriages. It was a young man who was a seminary student, and he was marrying this woman. And sure enough, that we had to travel to a state building, and there was a woman. And of course, there was no religion to it at all. But she had them make some promises to one another, and then they signed a document. And if you did not go through that process at that time, the state would not consider you married. So people will say, well, look at Isaac. He simply took Rebekah into his tent. That wasn't a public marriage, yet it seemed to suffice. But if you look closely, both Isaac and Rebekah followed the rites and customs of that time as to how they would be considered marriage. God's order is that marriage be permanent. Now, Matthew 19:6, what therefore God has joined together, let no man separate. And Isaac and Rebekah's act was a public declaration, which at that time stated to the world that there was a permanent commitment or marriage. That's hardly what is going on today between two people who decide to live together. Yeah, watching another movie and they were trying to decide, should we live together or not? And they were putting the positives down and the negatives. Well, to me, there's only one negative, and that's God is opposed to it. You see, it's not really a good idea to live together for a while, even to see if you're compatible. Sometimes the church has to move out of the Bible to show that God has set up certain guidelines, certain rules. Things just happen if you don't follow the will of God. You're in a four-story building and you jump from the roof and you expect to glide slowly down to the earth. It doesn't really matter what's in your mind. You're going to fall like a stone. It's called gravity. Well, there are also such negative repercussions in dealing with sin. Statistically, live-ins are least likely to marry. In fact, of those who were living together, only 26% of women and 19% of men actually ever get married. 40% of them break up without getting married. And, in fact, the average cohabitant has several partners in a lifetime. We also find out that live-ins who then get married have higher separation and divorce rates. Women who do this are 80% more likely to separate or divorce. And 57% of those who live together before marriage, the marriage fails in the first 10 years, compared to a rate of only 30% for those who do not live together before marriage. Well, why is that? Well, it's kind of obvious you're breaking the rules for marriage if you're living together, and therefore you already have a mistrust that occurs between two people, and boy, that can really lead to some jealousy. Even on the quotient of who has happier marriages, there were 309 newlyweds studied, And those who had lived together were found to be less happy in marriage. And women complained specifically of communication problems. They're more inclined to argue, hit, shout, and also have an unfair division of labor in the home. It's also true that those who live together, each one often engages in other extramarital affairs, even while they're living together. Trial marriages, it's found, they don't produce better marriages. A newly married couple makes a deliberate effort to accommodate each other because they know their relationship will be for life. Whereas trial marriages, big deal. At any time, you can get out of them. Marriage really does make a difference. And when you live together before marriage, you're going to have a much more difficult time in resolving conflicts. If you like to phone me, number in the St. Louis area is 821-0850. Toll free is 1-800-730-2727. And you may have a question about marriage that you would like to have answered. We're here to help you with those. And we're just kind of going through right now that both from a sociological point of view, people who live together before marriage, they really have some problems. And that's because God has built in negative repercussions in regard to sin. I mean, some of it is just so obvious. Like, you rob a bank, guess what? You're going to jail. Let's go to the phone lines right now, and let's talk with Rick. Hi, Rick. You're on the air.
Pastor Baker, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon to you, Rick.
It's like child abuse. It skyrocketed after 1973. And what happened in 1973?
Yes. The Supreme Court okays abortion.
They cheapen life to where it doesn't look like it has any value. And that's exactly what they've done with the marriage.
I think that's an excellent point. I really appreciate you bringing that up. And anybody else can call here at 821-0850. Toll free 1-800-730-2727. And we're going to go back to the phone lines right now. And we're going to be talking to Mike. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Very good. How are you doing?
I just want to ask you something. Don't you think when you get married and have children, if you're a man, you're really taking a monumental risk?
How so?
I mean, the law's against you. You know, you get divorced or you know, you have no control over your family, you know, or nothing. I mean, you can't even touch your wife, you'll go to jail. I mean, every state has had a marital rape law since 1991 in this country. So, I mean, you're just, and then plus when you go to divorce court, I mean, you're really going to, you know, you're going to lose.
Let me ask you this, Mike. Don't you think Jesus took a big risk in making you his bride?
Yeah, but that's all abstract. I'm talking about something that's real.
Oh, you don't think that Jesus and the church as his bride is not real? It certainly is.
Well, I'm not the church. I might be one of the spiritual sons of the relationship, but I'm not the church.
Well, if you're a member of the church, yes, you are a saint in the church. And I guess what I'm saying, I've been married over 40 years. We had 3 children, and I didn't see any risk there at all.
Well, you're the exception. All I got to say is I'm glad it worked out for you, you know.
Well, okay, I sure appreciate the comments there, and we'll keep you in our prayers, Mike. Let's go down the line and talk to Linda. Hi, Linda. You are on the air.
Hi, Pastor.
Hi.
Yeah, we are married 48 years, and my son, last week, we were having that discussion about a couple we know and love that they're older, they're not marrying because of the financial situation you were talking about. she would lose something if they marry, so they have a ring and they're committed to each other. So it's sort of like a marriage, but my son said, you know, Mom, I'm not judging. I try not to judge, he said, but there is the factor that you have to trust God, that he will take care of you if you're obedient to him. And just like when we tithe, we have to trust God that, you know, he's going to take care of us. And when we do things the way God asks us and we're obedient in our lives to him, we can trust him that he will bless that union. And just like the man who just called, you know, you sit down with your family and you have devotions and you trust God, even if, you know, even if one partner doesn't sit down with you, you trust God and just watch. He will bless that. He will bless that marriage, and he will help, you know, he will guide your husband or your wife. There were years my husband didn't even want me to talk about the Lord to him, but now he is my spiritual guide. He is my leader.
That's wonderful.
And so I won't keep you.
Well, no, I want to share another thing about, you said your son was, you know, with judging and not judging.
Well, he said he didn't want to be judging, but he said if you don't take the vows, you know.
Well, let me help you a little bit with this whole idea of judgment. Mm-hmm. You see, there's actually two different Greek words, and they're both translated as judge. On the one hand, Jesus says, judge not, lest you yourselves be judged. Elsewhere, he says, you know, judge those who are sin, so they may be held account. He even had excommunication against somebody that he had judged was sinning. And here's something you might share with your son. When the Bible says don't judge, and yet it also says to judge, I like using a courtroom. The jury makes a judgment as to whether or not a person is guilty. That is a judgment we are to make. So if people are living together outside marriage, you can judge that as sinful. But the judge imposes the sentence. And that's what we're not permitted to do by God, because whatever you judge another one by, in that sense, you yourselves will be judged. So we're juries, and the church does want to make judgments on people's sin in order that we can keep them out of the hands of Satan.
And I guess the way he was, his view of it was, they were not trusting. You know, and God can take care of us, can't he?
Well, what commandment is broken every time we sin? The first commandment, thou shalt have no other gods. And what does that mean? We should fear, love, and trust in God above all things. Every time we sin, we are trusting ourselves.
That's right. And we think, well, God's not big enough to take care of this, you know. And like the man who just called, what is he missing out on if he don't trust God to let him have a family? And then he'll trust his wife. He'll trust that situation. After he trusts God and puts God first, then he can trust his wife to. That's the only reason people live together. They don't trust something. They're
yes.
not trusting God.
Now, I do want to say one thing here, Linda, and I hope you don't think I'm saying you're dead wrong, but just because one is faithful, and in your case it really worked out, but I have dealt with some broken marriages where one of the partners wasn't responsible for any of it at all. One of them, the male, had become a homosexual, and he left his wife. And it wasn't her fault at all in that. So, and yet she was really faithful. So there's no promise that everything is going to work out. Look at Jesus with his disciples. Look at Judas. You know.
Well, I can tell you, the son who I'm talking about, my youngest son.
Yes.
He served the military, and it's hard on marriages. And he had two wives who didn't stay with him.
Oh.
And he knows what that's like.
Yep.
But now he's found a beautiful Lutheran girl.
Oh, great.
They are married.
Okay.
He has a little girl, and God has blessed him. And he still stands. I mean, he still stayed close to the Lord, even though he went through some things. But
yeah. There's no promise you're not going to go through some things, but the promise is God will never leave you nor forsake you and work that out to good. And that's what it seems like you're saying to me.
Yes, he does. And to stand on his word. And boy, he gives, Doug just loves Joe because he gives him back what he lost.
Well said. Thank you very much for calling, Linda.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. And we're not going to be taking any more calls right now as we're near the end here, but we will be tomorrow with our good friend, Wes Reimnitz. And we've been talking with him about some of the items we're going to be discussing. I think we may have just about finished our discussion on angels, but if you've got questions, he'll be glad to answer them. The other item, too, is we only got through a little bit of this book, written by President Matthew Harrison, about second thoughts about living together. So we might even talk about that too. Till then, God bless.